Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And welcome to Wednesday afternoon here on the Wintrust Business Lunch as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio in Michigan Avenue. Bennett Wakenight is the producer of the show. We're talking earlier today about yesterday's program, and he said I kept saying it was Wednesday, and maybe it was just wishful thinking, or you know what, Terry, maybe it's because I know today's show is going to be so good that I couldn't wait to get here.
I love it. I love being with you on Wednesdays.
Terry Savage is on the phone line, and I was telling Bill and Dane before the news about your column. We'll talk about it in the second segment, but I love that column about financial aid and how to, because it's so confusing to try to figure out which is the better deal, and so we'll kick that around.
Letters are coming. We'll talk about that.
Right now, though, the government revised upward, right, the GDP for the last quarter to 2.9%, followed a couple of threes, I think, or around three. So, you know, the president likes to say the people don't talk about how well the economy is doing. We're doing pretty well.
We're doing pretty well. Consumer confidence backed off a little bit. There's nothing, you know, corporate earnings are coming in as expected. There's nothing really wrong with the economy at this point in the stock market, although the market is concerned about what could go wrong, tariffs in particular. And in addition to that, the possibility that would unsettle some of the deals and slow growth, create slower growth. So that's what's bothering the stock market. I want to reiterate before we get on to our topics that for those approaching retirement who think they're safe in their funds and their equities and in their target date retirement funds, this is a moment to protect some of that 9 years of bull market profits. I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, you miss out on the upside. But I just, the way the market's acting technically, making, you know, going back to new highs and on the same day making a new low, that's all, those are all warning signs, and nobody wants to look at them. I'm, you know, the claustrophobic investor. I always want to know what's the out.
Well, tell me about that again, or put a little meat on that, because, you know, I don't, and I was talking earlier with Andy Smith about this from Financial Engines, and he talked about, you know, the markets fluctuate, but I don't remember days where you could be up 200 points and then finish down 400 points or the other way around. It just seems like
just the intraday volatility, excuse me, but it's going to new highs and then make, and then closing below the previous lows. That is, I'm not one of those people who reads the tea leaves on stock market charts, but these are some pretty major technical indicators. And again, I want to make this clear. You're in your 20s, 30s, and 40s. It doesn't matter. You put your $500 or $700 a month in your 401k, stick in the S&P 500 index fund, and when the market does go down, you'll go, oh, great, I could buy twice as many shares when the market falls down 20 or 30%. But that's different than when you're approaching retirement and you go, oh, good, look at what my 401k is worth now. If you're retiring, you don't have a chance to take advantage of bargains. But just very concerned, very rare. I can't think of any time since the late 1990s that I've been so concerned. And, of course, I'm always early. I know you wanted to talk about Amazon, though. I'm loving this.
Well, so, you know, and this is, as near as I can tell, it was an Axios story, and that the president thinks Amazon's getting too easy of a deal when it comes to taxes and wants to go after him in one way or another. And the way Axios reports it is that the president's real estate buddies who own shopping malls
exactly
are complaining that Amazon is putting them out of business. So the president wants to go after Amazon. Now, this is different from
Let's think about this.
I want to make one point, though. I want to make one point. This is different from when the president, right after the election, was tweeting directly about United Air or Boeing, tweeting directly about other companies. He's not doing that here. It's reporting from inside the White House about it. So there's maybe a nuance there. It's a little bit different.
He's the AT&T deal. The president has a very, I guess he has every right to talk about it, but the president isn't, I mean, the tweeting policy making, it leads you to always look to where the money is involved for him. So there's two things about Amazon. You correctly point out that he's a real estate guy, and all his real estate buddies own shopping centers and retail, and look at all those empty stores. You know, the other thing is Jeff Bezos of Amazon owns the Washington Post.
Right.
The Washington Post, which is not his best friend. So if you want to find out what the president is thinking, lots of times you have to follow the money and his ego, and you will find out the underlying reasons. Now, interestingly enough, my first thought was, oh, Amazon does now collect taxes on products it sells in all 45 states that have a sales tax. That's happened in the last year, year and a half. It does not collect city sales taxes in most cities. And I jumped to the conclusion, oh my goodness, so Chicago has a very high city sales tax. Actually, Amazon does collect taxes on its sales in Chicago because it has a site. It has people here and it has a fulfillment site.
Right.
But the real issue is not only on the collection of taxes, both state and local, but third-party vendors, they are not collecting taxes if you buy something that doesn't come directly from Amazon. So it's going to be a big issue. But, again, why is the president making a headline? You don't have to look very far. Check his wallet and check his ego, and you'll see the connection.
And it's having an impact. I mean, Amazon was down. I don't know what you saw it last, but it was down like 5% today. That's a lot of money based on, and again, he's not saying it directly. It's being reported that he's saying it, and take that for what it's worth.
He hasn't got around to tweeting it yet.
Hey, we got 30 seconds, but you wrote last week, you weren't with us last week, the fiduciary rule that the Obama administration put in place is now gone?
Right. The fiduciary rule has been declared illegal by an appeals court. It may get appealed to the Supreme Court, but go to terrysavage.com and read the warning and what to do about it. As of now, all these brokerage firms, insurance companies that sell annuities and so forth are no longer bound by that fiduciary rule. I know you got 30 seconds. It says, I will fully disclose all fees, costs, commissions, and incentives and put your interests first. Now you have to be skeptical. All these people that are taking your IRA, your 401k rollover money, they don't have to give you the lowest cost products. They don't have to disclose all the fees hidden in them. So investors beware. Campaignforinvestors.org is a website, and just read the column at terrysavage.com.
And a lot of companies, a lot of companies do adhere to the fiduciary rule, even though they're not required to. So,
absolutely, and you can always ask your advisor, will you put in writing that you'll adhere to the fiduciary rule, revealing everything and putting my interests first? Bet they won't do that.
All right, that's Terry Savage. She's going to put on her cap and gown and talk about high school graduations and going to college in just a minute.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 1221, and here we are in the Showcase Studio, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Terry Savage is on a phone line. Terry, are you there?
I sure am.
Thank you for being quiet during the break. I think I forgot to put you on hold, so I'm glad you didn't take another call. Hey, so we were talking earlier about this column that Terry wrote at terrysavage.com, and it has to do with financial aid and financial aid award letters. And, you know, thank God my wife Sharon has the numbers mind, so she kind of goes through all of this stuff. But it can kill you. I mean, you can be buried in it. And I'm really interested in the fact that you said some schools, they have to tell you like the total cost of acceptance or something like that. What was that phrase?
Okay, let's start right now. What's happening now is all those students who are applying for fall, this coming fall, 2018, are starting to get their acceptance letters. You remember that. Is it a thin letter? Is it a thick letter with a package of forms to fill out? And along with the financial, with the acceptance letter, if you're accepted, comes, if you applied for financial aid by filling out the FAFSA and listing the school, comes their offer of financial aid. It's called an award letter. And you will get not only different amounts of financial aid from each school, but the overall cost of attending will be different because some schools cost more. And you're going to have a very tough job. So the first thing I mentioned in this column is if you go to finaid.org, F-I-N-A-I-D.org, I'll look under their calculators. They have a spreadsheet where you can, number one, put in the cost of attendance at the school. And that includes not only tuition and room and board, but compulsory fees and books and student health insurance and so forth.
And that's something that's something the school will give you?
The school will give you. Okay. They must disclose that. The overall cost of attendance. Your cost might be a little different, though, because if the school is a car ride away, then your parents can drop you off. But if you're going to the East Coast or West Coast, and you're going to come back for Thanksgiving and Christmas and spring break, you've got transportation costs as well to factor in. When you read the letter, look at the fine print. You know, families are for the first time now confronting with their 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds, the real true personal finance aspect of college. It's okay for me to pontificate that you don't want to come out with a ton of student debt, but I just think many families haven't done the right thing, which is all through high school said, look, honey, you've got two younger brothers and sisters. we can't afford to send you there. It's an expensive school. Go ahead and try and apply. If you get a lot of financial aid, fine. But we can't afford to fly you there and back.
Let me tell you something, Terry. One of the hard parts of that, and we went through that.
My parents told me that a million years ago.
But Noah, my son, applied and got into a school that was his favorite, I should say, his first choice, got in, got aid, but didn't get the same aid as he was getting at other schools. So, you know, it's like, I think it would have been better to say, don't ever apply to this one because it's outrageously expensive. But I think as parents, you hold out hope that you're going to get this huge aid package.
And that's true. It's right to, you know, it was right to apply. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to skip to the fourth point. If you got more aid, let's say school A is, you know, downstate Illinois or an Illinois school, but this was also for Princeton or Harvard or something like that. And when you figure out that the overall, what they gave you at these other schools, you have every right to go back and say, look, I'm happy to show you the financial aid letter from Bradley or whatever school it is, but my kid really, really wants to go to Princeton. Here's the difference. Is there any way, especially if something has changed, you got a divorce or their medical bills or something like that, but is there any way that you can match this package? And maybe because they want the diversity of geography and your kid's from Illinois, maybe because an unexpected number of people declined their offer, you might get an increase in your package. Now, what you might have to do is put down a deposit because all these awards either require an acceptance within 2 weeks or most of them by May 1st, you may have to put down a non-refundable deposit and hope that that prestige school will say, yeah, we can work out something else for you.
Right.
We'll give you this.
I mean, it
the
comes.
The final thing is, you know, some of it's free money. That's grants, work-study programs. Some of it is just telling you what kind of loans you can get or your parents can sign up for based on their credit.
And that ain't aid, sister.
Is not aid. That is a burden that's going to haunt you for the rest of your life. And my final thought is, got it 1 second, Steve?
For you, sure. I'll give you two.
All right. I just want to say, first of all, let's be open with our students about your costs, your own financial situation. Start when they're in high school. And if you're a student, you know what? We all know this as parents. Eventually, the college experience is all about not what school you went to or how great the football team was or the beauty of the buildings. It's about what you put into it. So it's just not worth it to graduate with a huge burden, both parents and students.
I really agree. And, you know, that's the situation we were in. It's like, well, you know, you could go to this school, but it's just not money well spent. It's just not money that's going to pay off for you when compared to this school at this price. But, you know, the thing about the loans, and I noticed this.
Where's Noah going?
He's going to Miami of Ohio. Great school. He's loving it.
Great school.
Yeah.
Terrific.
But, you know, when you'd go to visit a school and they'd say, well, 98% of our students get financial aid, it's like, okay, yeah. Well, if 72% of those are getting loans and you're counting that as financial aid, you know, that's not quite the same thing as a grant or even work study.
Exactly. Please understand the difference between aid that has to be repaid. Oh, yeah, well, thanks. And outright grants. And then don't forget now, it's not too late to go to scholarships.com and start looking at the kinds of scholarships you might be able to get in January after you're in school. But that's where you find the free money.
All right, Terry Savage. Check out that column, terrysavage.com, because there are a couple of great websites there. I love the one where you can get the spreadsheet and compare the costs and all of that. Listen.
Definitely.
Have a great holiday. We'll talk again next week, huh?
Absolutely.
All right. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio on this Wednesday afternoon. They're promising the sun will be out, a little cooler near the lake today, but feels like spring for a lot of us. So we're talking about branded currency in this segment, and I suspect maybe it's one of those things you haven't thought about, even though you're using it more and more. I would imagine clipping coupons out of the newspaper, maybe branded currency. Holly Glowati is on a phone number now, and she is the co-founder of K&H Connection, and one of the people behind Flourish, the growth of branded currency conference, which is coming up in Chicago early next month. Holly, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thanks so much.
Let's break it down. Is clipping a coupon, is that part of branded currency?
It actually is. So branded currency is anything that's, you know, gift card, promotional value, loyalty program or promotional points, things like that, or coupons. So it's all those tools that you see for merchants, just kind of under one nice, neat term right there.
I was reading, I was looking at a Harvard Business Review story on this, and it was actually from a few years ago, and said even then that it was a $165 billion enterprise a year. I would imagine it's gotten bigger, right? How big is it?
It's $400 billion
wow.
right now. It's massive, yeah.
And tell me, I want to talk about different ways companies do it, but, and maybe this question is obvious, but what's in it for the companies? Why is this attractive to them?
So the most obvious example is actually the Starbucks app. So, I mean, I wrote an article about this a while ago because even I was struck by how easily I was sort of sucked into the games that you can play on the app. You know, Starbucks has done a beautiful job of getting over 40% of their in-store transactions to be from their mobile app. Powered by a gift card.
Holly, every day before the show, I walk across the street and buy a cup of coffee from Starbucks. And it is the only phone app I use to buy things. Starbucks is the only one I use so far.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
But I didn't know there were games.
Such a habit.
Where are the games? Well, I have to find the games.
Mostly when I think of the games, I'm thinking of, you know, they do the star challenges
okay.
where they like come in for 2 days. I'll do it. And I generally frequent the coffee shop that's around the corner from me and is local. But I'm like, well, if I go one more day, I guess I get 65 more stars.
Well, it's kind of funny,
I'll do
though.
That instead.
It's kind of funny that, you know, I often have no cash in my pocket at all. I'm using plastic or things like that. But when it comes to this branded currency, it seems like instead of having no cash, you might have to have 15 different types of cash. I mean, is that a hurdle for them?
It can be, but I think as we're seeing things shift more to mobile, people are able to consolidate that. You know, you can store your gift cards in the Apple wallet, in your Samsung Pay wallet, in the Android wallet. So everyone's really trying to make it a more cohesive experience, easy to use. And so I think as more merchants start saying, okay, I really do need to hook in with those guys, you'll start to see it become much more seamless for everybody to use.
I'm trying to think. So I use Starbucks just because, it's just easier. You know, and honestly, Holly, every once in a while they'll say I get a free cup of coffee. I don't even follow that. I just use it for the convenience of it.
Yeah.
But the fact is that because I've got that on my phone, I'm more likely to shop at Starbucks than I am at Pete's Coffee or other places.
Exactly. I mean, I think one thing that people don't realize is, you know, we essentially, whenever we buy a gift card or receive one, we have prepaid to spend with a merchant. I mean, nothing else does that.
Right.
You've already assigned your dollars to that. So it's a really powerful tool that I think because it started out as more of like a gift or a gift mechanism for a merchant, the power of that often gets overlooked. And we're starting to see merchants kind of shift towards this Starbucks-esque model where they're trying to right-size that kind of consumer interaction for their business.
I mean, the credit cards are branded currency in many ways, right? If I use one card for a mile or one other. Okay, so if it's, I think you said $400 billion now, take me 5 years into the future. And I'm not even worried about as much of the dollar figure as to just how the way we buy things will be changing 5 or 10 years from now.
Oh, I think it'll change a lot. I think there's a lot happening in this space. So for instance, I think not until about 2 years ago did I start to see other merchants really try to push some innovative and fun ways to use things like their gift card or promotional points. So I think we'll see a lot more people doing that because especially as we get more mobile in the way we pay, much easier for them to execute these things in real time and to make it easier for everyone to use. So I think you'll be pre-assigning dollars more and more as we get 5 years out.
I love the way you put that because I really didn't think of that before, but I'm pre-assigning dollars. When I put $50 on my Starbucks card, I'm giving them $50 today. It's like Wimpy for a hamburger I might buy tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so
and I think a lot of it comes from a generation that has been afraid of taking on more debt as well with student loans and things. You'll see that, like, private label credit cards have really gone down, those branded credit cards, with the millennial and Gen Z generations. So I think you're seeing a lot more people say, well, it's more responsible for me to prepay, and I know it's in my budget.
That's interesting. So they're giving their money away first rather than paying it when the bill comes.
Exactly.
Okay, so tell me about Flourish, this conference that's coming up next month.
Yeah, so our conference is April 9th through the 11th, just, you know, 11 days away.
Not that you're painfully aware of that or anything.
Not at all.
Right.
Not that our website has a countdown down to the second on it or anything. So it's actually going to be at the Hyatt Centric on the Mag Mile, so nice and centrally located. And we have merchants and vendors. So most of our merchants are from the U.S. and Canada, but we have vendors and suppliers coming from all around the world to get together and talk about branded currency. So we are really excited about that. And we even want to offer people 20% off if they use code WGN.
Oh, sweet.
And and register at flourishcon.com.
All right. So flourishcon.com and enter code WG and get 20% off. Who goes here? Who benefits from this show?
So anyone who's really playing in, you know, that payment technology space that includes the gift cards and the loyalty points and things and coupons and things of that nature, as well as merchants of any size. We do have an audience that tends to skew more towards your large audience or large merchant audience, I should say, like your Home Depots and your Staples and Macy's of the world. But all of this information is actually really relevant to a merchant of any size who is looking to either start a program like this or maybe enhance what they're already doing.
That's Holly Glowati from flourishcon.com. Thanks for talking today. I appreciate it. Good luck next month.
All right. Thanks so much, Steve.
I should say in 11 days.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. If you've been paying attention to the markets, you'll notice that Bitcoin is fizzling out a bit. But wherever the cryptocurrency goes, the blockchain technology behind it isn't going anywhere. 1871 announced the launching of their blockchain initiative to help further the technology in the world of business. So get ahead of the curve now, because before we know it, big things for blockchain could be on the horizon. And on another note, Chicago-based USG Corp turned down a big change when a German company offered $5.9 billion to buy them out. USG Corp is a manufacturing company in Chicago that makes home building supplies and is the biggest U.S. distributor of wallboard. It sounds a little boring, but this is super important for the manufacturing and home building industry, and they're keeping their business right here in the West Loop. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And it's Wintrust Wednesday here on the Business Lunch. And, two of my favorites, my favorite bank, Wintrust, and my favorite university, Marquette University, announced yesterday a partnership that they will be now together for the next several years. As part of that, Wintrust will invest $12 million over 10 years in scholarships and things like that. So, that's good news for me on two fronts. Let's go to the North Shore now. On a phone line is Gina Speckman. She is the executive director at Chicago's North Shore Convention and Visitors Bureau. Gina, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
All right. Two things. First of all, I had no idea there was such a thing. And second of all, who would need to be lured to the North Shore? It's so nice. People must just die to go and do business there.
They do, but we're fortunate to be the official destination marketing organization for the North Shore. We're part of a system of bureaus throughout the state of Illinois that work with the state in marketing our areas to visitors, business and leisure.
All right, so I'm glad you brought that up, because the first thing I noticed when looking at your website and the focus on communities that you have there, in your world, the North Shore ends at the county line. You don't have Lake County there. Is that because your jurisdiction is just in Cook County, or you're partnered with Cook County, or how does that work?
My jurisdiction goes up to the Lake Hook border, and Lake County has its own convention and visitors Greensboro. We all work together, but they have their own.
Do you compete with Lake County at all? You ever try to get their business?
No, we work together. We don't compete. We have different product, and we all work together, but we really don't compete.
Tell me about what it is that you do go after then. Are you after leisure travelers? Are you after businesses relocating, business shows, or what is it you focus on?
All of the above.
Yeah.
About 75% of our visitors are leisure. They're visiting friends and family. They're going to the Chicago Botanic Garden, Ravinia, Northwestern University. And the other part are here for businesses and conferences. That's about 25% of our business.
And so tell me about what it is that a leisure traveler does business with you. Because I wouldn't have thought, you know, if I'm traveling somewhere, to check out the local convention bureau. What's your engagement with leisure travelers?
Well, what we do is, a lot of people may not know about convention and visitors bureaus, but they know that they're coming to Chicago and they want to go to the Botanic Garden. But they don't know that the Botanic Garden's not in the city center.
Mm-hmm.
So what they need to know when they do research, and now the internet's a great tool for that, they see that the Chicago Botanic Garden's in the North Shore in Glencoe, and they want to be able to see, well, where can I stay near that? Where can I eat? Where can I shop? So what they want is to, usually they're driven by something they want to see and do, but they want to round out the experience and know, again, where they can eat, shop, and other things they can do in the area, and they make a weekend or a trip out of it.
You know, Mayor Emanuel is taking real focus, I think. You know, it's good for the city, but he's been raiding the suburbs of businesses and bringing them downtown. I would imagine that's something that you've come across, and how do you deal with that, or how do you address that?
Yes, even though he is from Wilmette in my area. Well, a lot of some businesses that are leaving the suburbs to go to the city are being replaced by other businesses that were farther out, and they're coming into the Chicagoland suburbs. So we are getting businesses coming in once others go downtown.
What is it that you wish that that if there was something you could improve on when it comes to the North Shore area and attracting business, what would be the first thing you'd ask for?
Well, you know, we have some challenges with transportation to the airport. We don't have the train system that the city has, for example.
Right.
But what we do have is a beautiful area, and a lot of people like to be in areas that aren't as congested or trafficy. You can get to the airport by car in half an hour with or without traffic, without highways from O'Hare. So we do have a lot of positives, and we have full-service hotels. You know, our hotels are five-star. They're accredited for all conferences. And, like, for example, in Skokie, you could have a meeting at the DoubleTree. You have a performing arts center connected to it, and you have Westfield Old Orchard across the street.
Everything you could imagine.
It's a great experience for people.
Gina Speckman, the executive director of Chicago's North Shore Convention and Visitors Bureau. Great to talk to you. Thanks very much, Gina.
Thank you so much for having me.